Another Madden Monday podcast here at Trib Live. Tim Benz and Mark Madden from 105.9 The X. You can listen to Mark Monday through Friday on The X, 3 until 6. You can also read him four times a week here at Trib Live. Mark, Kyle Dubas, he is not going back to Toronto. The Maple Leafs made that clear this week. So does that mean he is in play now for the Pittsburgh job, even though previously he said he would not, quote, pop up somewhere else? I think when he suggested that, he was suggesting that from the standpoint if he decided to not go back to Toronto. The fact that Toronto has made the decision, does that change things, do you think?
Well, tomato, tomato. I don't know if it changes things. But yeah, he got fired. His contract was up, but he got fired. I mean, I know that sounds contradictory, but apparently at the end, he wanted to come back. And, you know, they just said no because they had, what did Brendan Shanahan say, decided to move in another direction. I guess Dubas wanted, you know, still more money than they had talked about to that point to come back. So I think Shanahan just wants to run the team. I think that's why that played out the way it did. But yeah, I would think Dubas is in play for the Penguins job. I think he's the best available choice. Keyword there being available. Although I was originally told Matthew Darche, the assistant GM in Tampa, didn't want the job. But then apparently he's been involved with the interview process. So maybe he does. If I had a choice between Dubas and Darche, I would probably take Dubas, but I would be just as happy with Darche. But yeah, I think Dubas is in play. I think when he said he wouldn't pop up somewhere else, he said that so as to not have to answer a billion additional questions, where if he had said, well, you know, maybe I'll be here, maybe I'll be someplace else, Pittsburgh's available, blah, 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 and then that press conference lasts forever, and he's offended Toronto even more than he apparently went on to do, and it just would have been a mess. So I think he avoided the mess by giving an answer that I wouldn't put too much stock in.
I know that Darche has been with the Lightning in his capacity since 2019, and a lot of the building of the Lightning coalesced before then, but there were little moves along the way for the Lightning that I thought made them into a great team. If you've got Tampa Bay pixie dust on you right now, Mark, I want the Penguins to take a long look at you. I'm leaning towards Darche. I think I've got my one and two just inverted from the way you have it, as opposed to all the other names we've heard bandied about.
Well, do you agree they're the two best choices?
I would agree with that, yes.
Yeah, so, and I'm happy either way as well, so there you go. Yeah, I think Darche, I mean, everybody thinks very highly of him. In fact, I would think he's thought of more highly by more people than is Dubas, because Dubas is that pure analytics guy, which creates a divide in opinion, you know, because of the analytics conundrum. I mean, some like analytics, some don't. I always thought Dubas' vision was probably compromised in Toronto by having an old school guy like Shanahan, you know, looking over his shoulder. Case in point, Tim, I don't think there's any way, what was it last year, when Toronto got Wayne Simmonds, washed up Wayne Simmonds to provide grit. That didn't strike me as a real strong analytics move. So that struck me as somebody else, you know, compromising Dubas's analytical vision, plus which he inherited the Tavares contract, which Lou Lamoriello had signed when he was the GM, and that has absolutely killed the Maple Leafs since the day they signed Tavares. He was a guy they didn't need at too big a cap hit at a position they were already, you know, very well stocked at.
Mark, on the analytics front, I thought when listening to your show last week, Pierre Maguire made a really interesting point about how it seems of late you're seeing really good analytically based teams then struggle in the playoffs because the playoffs have allowed themselves to revert to a kind of hockey where strong analytics teams in the regular season tend to have the tone of the game taken away from them by how hockey allows itself to be officiated in the postseason. Do you think there's something to that?
I think there is something to that. But speaking of somebody who covers a team that didn't make the playoffs at all, I'm willing to travel the analytics routes. And the Penguins aren't assembled for playoff success anyway, even if they had gotten there, and that's nothing to do with analytics. Case in point, Tim, Florida just a couple wins away from making the Stanley Cup final. They barely beat out the Penguins for the second wild card in the Eastern Conference. Could you imagine the Penguins being where the Panthers are right now in these playoffs?
No, I think they would have gotten dusted by Boston in the first round.
Right. So when the Panthers beat out the Penguins for that last wild card, it was Boston that got screwed.
I feel worse and worse about our preseason conversation about the Vegas Golden Knights every day, Mark. You and I were both down on them, thought their over-under total was a sure hit under. I think we both bet against them to make the top eight in the playoffs. I bet no on them when it came to the playoffs. Here they are sitting now 2-0 over Dallas in the conference final. How do they keep doing it?
Well, I thought they'd make the playoffs. I just didn't think they'd be a contender. But when John Buchergross was on my show not long ago, he made a good point. He goes, Vegas succeeds because they have six adults playing defense. And I know what he means. They're veterans. They have decent size. They play a very experienced brand of hockey. And I think more than anything, that and the emergence of Jack Eichel, to no small degree in these playoffs, has gotten Vegas to where they are.
Do you feel like Carolina and Dallas are both toast? If not, which team do you give the better chance of coming back and winning?
I don't feel either is toast. I give both a 40% chance of coming back to win. If you made me say who has the better chance, mm-hmm. I hate to say it because I picked Dallas to win the Stanley Cup before the playoffs started, but I'd say probably Carolina, just because Dallas can't get Robertson going. And the fact that he's come up short, I think that's the biggest reason they're poised to come up short, don't you?
I tend to agree. I think they're also, to your previous point about the Vegas Golden Knights, playing against a team that I think isn't going to waver or vary much in its approach. I think you could still see Bobrovsky, even though he's been playing great lately, stumble, or maybe the Panthers revert back to their ways of before the playoffs.
I still don't trust Vegas' goaltending, though.
Okay.
They have journeyman goaltending from top to bottom. Ottinger, I thought, was the best goalie in these playoffs. That's why I give Dallas, a 40% chance to bounce back. But I mean, I don't disagree with what you're saying. I think both series will probably, I mean, they're not going to be settled in four, but I bet they're both settled in six by the team currently leading.
Last thing on hockey, Mark. Jaromir Jagr was in town this week, back in Pittsburgh at a card signing. He did some stuff with the team over at PPG Paints Arena. How long before we see his number hoisted to the rafters, do you think?
I think whenever he agrees to come here to have it done.
Yeah?
Yeah, for sure. That's always been the plan. You can't do it when he's not here, and he's still playing. I don't know how long he's still going to play, but they got to be able to work something out. What did he do with the team? I was unaware of that.
There were some tweets put out. I think Kevin Acklin just kind of gave him a tour of the new arena, showed him around a little bit. It would just look like some social media stuff.
I probably should have gone out to say hello, but he didn't call to let me know he was here, Tim.
Yeah, well, Barrasso was there. Did Barrasso call you?
Tom Barrasso, for that matter. Exactly right.
Yeah, stunningly enough, when I did my 30th anniversary piece of the David Vollek goal, I put in a request for Tom Barrasso, and it was politely declined by the Italian team that he coaches for. I was stunned. Stunned, I say.
You should have said, hey, I'm a Pizan. Put them on the phone, huh?
Mark Madden with us. Mark, did we spend enough time this week talking about backup quarterbacks in Pittsburgh?
It was ridiculous, wasn't it? The Mitch Trubisky extension was the biggest piece of non-news that got blown out of proportion in a time where non-news gets blown out of proportion all the time. This was just the biggest because he was here, he's still here, he's still the backup. That said, I think it's a good move. I think that's a real good quarterback room. Well, put it this way. Here's something the citizens won't like. I trust Rudolph to be a good three. I trust Pickett to be a good two. I'm not sure about Pickett yet as a good one, at least not right now.
That kind of speaks to some conversation we had on the TV show this week, which was, you know, one of the questions we were supposed to respond to is, what's the biggest question about the Steelers this year heading into the 2023 season? And, you know, people on Twitter came back with, well, you know, depth at outside linebacker, starters at inside linebacker, slot corner. I'm like, well, yeah, those are weaknesses. I get it. But still, the number one question is, do they have an offense that can score points?
Like, oh, there's an assumption that Pickett's going to be, you know, leaps and bounds better. And that's an awful big assumption. Because the problem is, every team in the division has a pretty good quarterback. I mean, two of them are arguably great. And Deshaun Watson's probably great, too. He just has to find his form after that, you know, lengthy suspension. But you know, to beat the Bengals and the Ravens for sure, and probably the Browns, you got to outscore them. Now, where the Steelers are a bit fortunate with the rest of their schedule is, They don't play a lot of great quarterbacks besides the ones in their division. And they do have the kind of team where their antiquated philosophy and team construction of ball possession and elite defense beats bummy teams and bummy quarterbacks. So from that standpoint, they're all right, but I still think it all adds up to 9 wins.
Do you buy the conspiracy theory that the NFL tried to screw the Steelers with their schedule by way of making them play twice on Thursday nights and all the other teams that voted against the flex scheduling? Do you buy into that or not?
No. I mean, even if it's true, who cares? I mean, did it happen to anybody else? Or,
yes,
I mean,
the of the 7 teams that are playing multiple weeks on Thursday night, 6 of them are teams that voted against flex scheduling. And 13 of the 14 teams that made the playoffs last year are not playing multiple Thursday nights. And allegedly, that was part of the reason why they had, you know, more teams potentially playing on Thursdays, because they want to get more eyeballs on Thursday night games. But there's only one playoff team from last year that's got two.
Okay, well then, yes, the Steelers got screwed. You know, but you also reap what you sow, don't you? Now, one thing that should be noted, and I've heard this from several players, is that they don't like playing on the Thursday night, but then the extra break they get after they do like.
And let's keep in mind, they've also got Thursday night games at home after home games. So there's not like they're traveling at all, you know? So I looked at some of the other schedules in the conference, Mark, and in the division specifically. Like, you know, Baltimore's got 2 weeks in a row where they travel, and then they go to London to play Tennessee. So every team has these blips on their schedule that suck.
I think any team or fan base that is complaining about stuff like that now in May is looking for an excuse in advance for their team underachieving.
How about the Pirates, Mark? A month from now, are they going to be below 500? Where are they going to stand in the NL Central? I think it's possible that they finish below 500 by this time next month and still maybe close to first place because the division stinks.
The division really does stink. I'm shocked that they've managed to, you know, plummet from, you know, 20-8 to being barely over 500 now, and they're still – are they on top of the division or in second?
Let's see. I didn't see what the Brewers did by the time we
One thing that's pretty clear, Tim, is that I don't think there's going to be a wild card coming from the NL Central.
No, they are right now a game behind the Brewers because the Brewers did end up winning this game today.
Well, Tim, the thing I'm most amused about – is the blogger boys and some of the fans who want, you know, Henry Davis and or Andy Rodriguez to be called up because the Pirates are in such desperate straits offensively, as if we know that the two guys who have never had a major league at bat would come up and provide exactly what the Pirates need. And like the bloggers and the fanboys know that these two guys are ready when somehow the organization doesn't think so. Now I know the loaded part of that is the service clock and, you know, all the, you know, adjacent stuff that, you know, keeps guys in the minors longer than they should with low budget teams. But it amuses me a great deal that Rodriguez and Davis has been seen as a cure all that, you know, this team would be really good if they would call those guys up. And I just don't see that.
What about Mitch Keller getting pulled in that game on Saturday? How'd you feel about that?
Well, again, that depends where you think this team is right now. If you think this team is going to be battling for a playoff spot, then it's a bad move. If you think this team is just, you know, going to be like a 75-win team somewhere in there, right? And he didn't look right. That's what Shelty said. He didn't look right out there, right?
Yeah, but he was saying that about the stretch. He wasn't throwing well from the stretch. Well, he got out of the inning, so let him work from the windup to start the 7th then.
At the very least, they would have let him start the next inning.
Yeah, okay, let him. If he's still got some carryover from whatever didn't look right, it's not like he said he didn't look like he was right from an injury perspective. He said he didn't look right coming out of the stretch, so let him start the next inning.
Yeah, no, I would have, but like, I don't see that as this cataclysmic failure by Shelty. If it's erroneous, it's slightly so. And again, it depends on where you think the team is and what it can do this year. A lot of Pirate fans want the team to arrive on their timetable, as opposed to how it organically develops with the Pirates, and for that matter, how it organically develops with Henry Davis and Andy Rodriguez, too.
Last thing, Mark, we lost a great one around here in Dick Grote about a month ago when it came to multi-sport athletes. Where's Jim Brown on the multi-sport athlete spectrum to you great NFL player in the Hall of Fame, in the Lacrosse Hall of Fame, was on Syracuse's basketball team, second leading scorer there, won a track letter, was fifth in the decathlon in 1955 for the American Championships. Where does he rank, say, compared to the Dions, the Groats, the Bo Jacksons, and so forth?
Don't forget his role in the Dirty Dozen, Tim, which was very athletic.
Indeed, yes.
Now, you know, I honestly hadn't thought of it. I define Jim Brown, I wrote a trip call about, he's the best football player ever. I've seen him on YouTube. That's the only time I've seen Jim Brown, right? Because, you know, he's before my time. But you can conclude from about 90 seconds of YouTube and then his stats and honors that he was the best football player ever.
Yeah, and I love this little tidbit about Brown because we always talk about this with Mel Blunt. He changed the rules. They changed the rules because of James Harrison. Jim Brown is the reason why lacrosse players have to carry the ball away from their chest, Mark, because he used to just put the ball in the cross against his chest and run through the whole team to the goal and slam dunk it. So they changed the rules that you have to cradle the ball away from your body because of Jim Brown.
Yeah, well, like I said, I mean, he certainly had some character flaws, but, you know, when I wrote my column, and I'll only mention it briefly now because now's not the time, he's the best football player ever. He broke your body and your spirit, and it didn't take long.
Mark, where are you going on Tuesday? I'm in for your Tuesday. Do you have another concert? Are you going to see Aerosmith in advance, or is this where the tour kicks off, or what?
No. I'm going to Johnstown for two reasons, Tim. One is to see Foreigner.
Okay.
And that'll be at the War Memorial, home of the Chiefs. And I don't know why I bought this ticket, but I did, so I'm going. Because Foreigner's coming to Star Lake this summer, and I've seen Foreigner like a billion times. You know, with the latter day lineup with Kelly Hansen on vocals instead of the original Lou Gramm. By the way, Lou Gramm's undertaking a tour with an all-star band. He's not done that in quite some time.
Yeah, I heard that on DVE this week. Somebody mentioned that. I think Eric Taylor brought that up. Yes, I heard that.
Yeah, I don't think they're coming here. I'm debating whether to go see them someplace else. Probably not, because, like, Foreigner about 5-6 years ago did a thing where they played six cities, one being Atlantic City, so I went, where the current band came out and played about six songs. Then the originals came out and played about six songs.
Huh.
And then all the members played like the last five or six songs. And it was very good, but Kelly Hansen right now is a better singer than Lou Gramm, so I'm content with seeing the Kelly Hansen version. I mean, I don't know. It depends where it is. I might go see Lou Gramm. But also, Tim, I'm going to go to Johnstown to see what's the story on that dog.
Yeah, well, screw him.
That scene is one of the highlights of Slapshot. If only because of Paul Newman's baleful gaze when Lily Braden says that. He goes to her in a different scene, "How come you talk dirty?" And she goes, "Because my family has money."
Mark Madden, he's on 105.9 The X. Make sure you check him out on The X each and every day, 3 until 6, or even 4 times a week here at Trib Live. Mark and I will also be part of Madden Ben's Unfiltered. We will be Madden Ben's Unfiltered at 9:30 on Monday morning. This is Trib Live.